Button. So now we are being recorded, and in a couple of days we will post this on our website boardoptions.com in From Ideas to Action. So if you want to download it and listen to it, you can. But the person who wrote the case and who's going to lead us into discussion is Jerry Schaufeld. And I said, I will introduce you. And he said, you know what? I'd rather do it myself. And I think if it's going to get done well, Jerry was going to do it himself. So, Jerry, introduce yourself and take it away.
All right. The only reason is that I practice making it concise. Career-wise, I've had three careers. One was a research scientist at MIT. I have a background in an engineer. I have a background in fluid mechanics and control theory. And that eventually went to the Apollo project, which was extraordinarily heady stuff. I went to Sloan after that and became hooked in entrepreneurship. Another MIT guy and I formed a company that we wrote a business plan, raised venture capital, and created a worldwide company called Phoenix Controls. We sold the company to a Fortune 500 firm about 11 years later. And then I started teaching. I'm currently on the faculty of Worcester Polytech. I teach new ventures, how companies are funded. I also teach in Switzerland and do research at the Technion in Israel. I wrote a book. Larry says I shouldn't promote it, but I can't resist. I wrote a book entitled Commercializing Innovation, and I'm working on a second book now. And so that's my career. I've been very involved in early stage companies. I consult to three venture capital firms, mostly screening deals for them. So, and I love teaching, and I'm working on a big research project at WPI. And Larry and I have known each other for 500 years, well, give or take a few. And I was a great fan of what you're doing. And occasionally, Larry and I get into a conversation, how can I help? And I wanted to bring forward to the group, and I hope we spend some time in the smaller groups, a topic that has vexed me for years now. When a company starts at the beginning of its life cycle, the magic S-curve that's written in the case, there's an intense discussion when capital comes in about valuation. And in fact, that's translated into an equation of equity ownership shares versus dollars in. My. That's valuation at its early stage. We'll come back to that in a minute. As a company goes through its life cycle, it requires additional rounds, and the topic of valuation comes in the context of capital versus equity. And this continues over the life cycle. And finally, as it comes up to the top of the curve, and a liquidation might be on the scene, or a merger, or a series of liquidation events, the topic comes up all over again. It's almost like a crisis. It comes up at the time of the event. As a CEO, I have wondered why it's not part of the continual dialogue of the company. And the world of valuation as we know it is quite professional. Costs hundreds of thousands of dollars to have a certified valuation done. There's no need for that. There's an interim space where it might be part of the working documents of a company. With that, that's the point I wanted to bring to you. And with the caveats that it takes different forms in private companies, in small companies, not-for-profit, but the same thing is the focus on the long-term value of the company somehow slips. So I'm proposing, and I'm very interested in all of your comments, that's why I'm here, should valuation be a function of the audit committee? Should it be a subcommittee of the board? Or should it be an agenda item? Your comments would be great. Larry, I don't know how to get around to the other groups here. Can you help me on that? I'd like to have input.
Why don't you just randomly, is there anyone who identified someone to speak for the group? Just raise your hand, yeah, and then Jerry can call on you.
We did. Okay.
Oh, thanks. Go ahead.
Barry, my name is John Morgan.
Hi, John.
We did talk about this. It's very nice to meet you. We thought that being able to focus on the valuation at this stage of growth was really a distraction. It was more of a distraction than the actual act of creating value, both in creating product and, you know, connecting it to clients. And so we thought it really wasn't something that we should, you know, put on the agenda every year. And we weren't sure that a company with $1 million worth of, let's say, investment in it would have a board audit committee. So we sort of discounted that right off the bat. We didn't think the board would be advanced enough and extensive enough to be able to have an audit committee.
But didn't they just go through a crunching exercise in the capital that they took in? Someone did a valuation study even before the, on the business plan, before the company even produced product. And I found myself wondering, that was hands off. There was a bunch of venture capital guys in the back room. And yet, the if they've either understated or overstated the valuation, severe issues later on, either cram down or dilution has to kick in for the next round. So it is part of the dialogue of the company, I think.
Okay, so in our group, a data point that might be interesting to you is that if this company had an option plan, and most young companies do, they're kind of required by the IRS to do a 409A valuation, which is the annual valuation for one purpose. It is not the valuation of the company. It is different than a valuation if there were to be a corporate finance activity, either more money coming in or the company being sold. But indeed, there is that once a year, because in order to issue new options, even you have to be within a certain time frame of the last valuation, and if there wasn't a liquidity event, you know, as that expires, you're going to have to get an annual valuation. And well, so there, from at least at minimum, there is that valuation, and it's important for all the board members to understand that it's not the valuation of corporate finance activity, but that could be the jump start as one data point for, you know, how do we think about it from here?
Great, great. Thank you. I forgot to, it's on the list there of the reasons we do valuation exercises. But isn't that falling short of looking at the long? When investors invest in the company, they are investing in a multiple of value over 10 years, I'm making it up, over a fairly long period of time. And that's the last time it's talked about. So I thank you for the contribution about options, but there's also the central theme of why the company exists is a sustainable value proposition. So I hear you, but now how do I pull that into the mainstream?
Well, you know, I don't think that any investor forgets about valuation. They're always thinking about what their return is, and they're all, and depending on their own investment criteria and whether they're going to raise another fund, you know, they have a time horizon. And, you know, whether they sell a portion of the company or whether they, you know, the company has a liquidity event or whether they're, you know, whatever it is, they have their own time horizon. So they're always thinking about valuation, you know, because they're always thinking about valuation and because usual compensation plans of executives have a short-term cash component, base and bonus, and an equity component, you know, there's a tension there. Because in order for that CEO to realize a return on his investment, the longer the time horizon, the better for him. Because if the investors get out in 2 years or whatever, you know, the CEO is not going to realize the returns. And so, you know, it's an interesting mix of how that all gets put together. So it's in his benefit to think about valuation, that's for sure.
And
comment supports what Jerry's saying in that even though I agree with the prior speaker that it's kind of a burden for a small startup to have to do this work. You know, Jerry's proposition is that they're going to be faced with this when the next round of investment. So they should keep a hand on, you know, keep a finger on the pulse and know where they're headed.
If not, Kathy, they become a victim of a third party making that assessment.
Well, that's
and right. Then it's defensive.
That was
that's
your
the
point.
Part, that's the world I live in, and I know how crammed down. I know exactly how that dialogue takes place. I think it can be avoided, but I'm just a lone voice right now. Thank you, Kat. I appreciate the support.
I think our leader Rudy would like to speak. Got to unmute.
I've been muted. I've been trying to talk.
Sorry.
Our group thought that valuation absolutely should be addressed by the board every year. We had three reasons for that. The first one is that the venture capital backer who invested the money has a stated interest
in
10 times its investment in 7 to 10 years. So if valuation doesn't stay front and center, then the time will go by and chances are that goal won't be met. And the company's lifeblood is the capital that's been invested. So if you want additional funding, you have to conform, you have to produce consistent with what your venture capital investor wants. Otherwise you won't get that funding. We also believe that the VC would have at least a board seat and probably more. And so the valuation is going to be addressed. If the rest of the board doesn't bring it up, the VC is certainly going to be focused on that. But the most important thing that I learned in our group from our pharmaceutical experts is that the landscape changes every year. So the competitive landscape changes every year. And so you're not existing in a vacuum. There are other companies that you're competing with that are doing similar research, trying to develop similar therapies. So if you don't measure where you stand relative to the competition and whether your drug is, it could be, for example, that somebody else beat you to the goal line on the drug that you're developing. And so all of a sudden your value's gone when that happens. And so you have to assess every year, where do we stand? What's everyone else doing? How do we assess where we are today and keep moving in the direction to 10X?
I couldn't agree more. I teach a course in business plans at WPI, and a whole segment of a plan to me must have a chapter on risks and their mitigation. So when the management team loses sight of their competitive position, no one else to blame. There ought to be a contingency or mitigation plan to confront it. And a little harder to sell than some of the other things we talk about. But I was thinking about what you said a little bit. If that's true, why isn't it stage center in the board meeting? Well, it slipped off to the side. What do you think that's about?
So Jerry, I'll jump in from our group a little bit
that
maybe speaks to what you're talking about. And that is, so first I would agree with some of the other comments about compensation need, the VC's interest and so on. And we definitely were thinking that it should at least be an annual activity. But some of the driver of that is really going to depend upon the time and circumstances and stage of the entity. So if this is truly just a one-year firm versus a 3 or 5 year firm still in discovery mode, you're going to have different kinds of activities, not only because you're getting closer to secondary and tertiary offerings, et cetera, but you're going to also become a little bit more sophisticated, hopefully, in terms of understanding the viability of that product. So we thought that the stages of life cycle,
yep,
we're going to drive some of that maybe more front and center than maybe just a pure one-year entity. The second is that the structure of the firm. So is this a subsidiary of a large conglomerate? When you were talking earlier about the industrial sort of side of things, one of the things we thought you were heading to was maybe this is a subsidiary of a larger
entity. No, it's a standalone company. It's okay. A company I consulted.
Yeah, so if it were in that kind of case, or if it was targeted to be sold to one of those larger companies, valuation needs to be front and center as part of that activity for sure.
I follow where you're going, Rich, on this, but my question is, shouldn't a maturity of it evolve with the company? It's built in day one, the dialogue. Well, you know, we promised the investors, what did we say before? 10-year payback, 10 times payback, 7 to 10 years. Are we anywhere near that journey at all? So it doesn't have to be a formal analysis in the beginning. But if it isn't built into the dialogue, how do you make it happen? That's the part that's, and if you don't, later on, don't bother me. It's not interesting. My personal take on it. I'm talking about, see, by the way, I also spent some time looking at Edgar for a couple of the Fortune 500 companies. Guess what? It's not even mentioned in their documents. Holy schmoly. You know, Edgar is the reporting thing for the Fortune 500 companies. And I kept looking for the word. I couldn't even see the word valuation, let alone the dialogue. Thank you for your comment, though. I agree. I think it has to evolve with the growth of a company.
Jerry, can I add a couple of comments?
You're the boss. I'm just working here.
Well, I'm from, this is a little personal experience.
Can you speak up? If it's me, I'll turn my volume up one minute.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, it's okay. Oh, I see. I'm going to crack my volume up. Okay.
I got a fancy microphone here.
Aha.
So my experience, I was in the biotech industry, and the most important thing for any investor is that the company stays on its milestones. So if they say they're going to introduce or going to get into phase 1 trials by Q4 next year, and it slips that milestone, the valuation takes a hit right there. And a lot of it is not relative to the numbers, because I used to run discounted cash flows for companies,
right,
and, you know, measure it. And when we sell the product, which is going to have this price, but who knows whether that's the real price. And you can make numbers look any way you want. The most important thing in valuations, from what I can tell from my experience, is that getting management to focus on de-risking. And as Rudy mentioned, making sure that they're looking at their competitive position. And then also making sure that they meet their milestones, because venture capitalists, they feed out the capital if you make your milestone. If you don't make your milestone, you're not gonna get any capital. And that's been my experience. So you can have all the financial models and all that kind of interesting stuff, but I think this is, and by the way, I think many investments are, what's the price of a Class A now? You know, and it's, there's some market connotation to this, so it's not done in abstract. When you wanna go to a B round or something, they say, what are the price of B rounds? You know, and it all depends where you are and what's going on there.
That's the wrong time to have the discussion.
I agree you should have it. And I'd say it's at the board level. It's not at any delegated down. And it depends on the CEO. If the CEO is a PhD, he may be in a little bit foreign territory in this valuation sector. But if he's a business person, he or she is a business.
Good for you.
Well, we got that speech in our little sub.
No, you know, I want to jump in a sec here. I agree with you. There's events that will force the issue. And I also agree actuarial science is of very little interest to me on a working level. But why aren't the components, the issues, stage center of the long-term value proposition of the company and how well they're doing on that plan? So I agree you can get lost in the numbers and the science that drives it, but I'm more interested where are the elements, the things that actually affect the outcomes. That's what I'm whining about in this thing.
Yeah. I'm going to guess the CEO is one of the venture investors, and it's his prerogative to put the, or he's the chairman, and it's his prerogative to get it on the agenda.
If he's motivated to do so.
Well, I was in a group of two, and we talked about a lot of these things, the benchmarks, the things Phil was just talking about. And you know, we thought that this should be on the agenda, that the board chair in this case is somebody from the venture capital or private equity firm, but that the board as a whole should understand what the valuation methodology is, what the inputs are. And I come from an accounting background, so the valuation methodology should be fairly consistent over time, except when there's a reason to change it. So if there's something happens with a competitor, that might influence how you look at your valuation and so on. But it seems to me that the board should understand all that. They don't have to understand the nitty gritty, get into the weeds of the valuation, but they should understand how it's changing over time, because then when an event comes up, if there's not going to be another round of financing or something, they don't have to scramble to understand, is this a good offer or not?
Right.
Because the end game of this is either the ultimate end, the 10 years, they're going to sell it to somebody, commercialize it, and hopefully have a big payout, big success. Not all of them are going to end that way. But at some point, the board is going to have to approve a transaction. Along the way, they approve a lot of them. They're going to approve another one. And they have to feel comfortable that they're, whatever the valuation is that described, if they're selling shares, as you said in the beginning, that those shares are neither under or overpriced. Otherwise, you could get sued.
Ingrid, I would agree with that, George.
Can I add something to, I was George's partner there, and I just want to add one more piece that I think brings this together. So Phil mentioned an important thing about milestones, and those of course depend on the business, and in medical products business, they're pretty structured, but in any kind of business, getting something interesting to market typically has some milestones and validation points, and those are critical to the value of the thing. And the other piece that people are normally aware of is where are we in a cash position?
Of course.
What are we getting done while we still have cash, or until cash comes in, or till we need another round of financing, which implies what have we achieved vis-a-vis the milestones, and what can we assert as our value? So the whole cash flow, hitting milestones, and has the overall view of the market, the competitive position, and what we think we can ultimately bring as value to the market changed. And it seems to me in a startup, that kind of triad of sub pieces of the overall value discussion has to happen pretty regularly. And the milestones and the cash flow are regulars, and how those relate to the overall value now and later are pretty darn important.
It's interesting. Our group of four of us actually drew a variation of what you just said. As the company goes up that life cycle curve, the formality of the report changes. General Motors will not have a position on this yet, but medium-sized companies who can see the exit strategy out on the horizon might start to think of the elements that contribute to it. You mentioned cash flow, big one. But it could be product mix. It could be the capital and compensation structure. It could be a whole bunch of things that are important in the long view. And it's my guess that this fledgling little company at 1 year is not the right target for this. But as it evolves, if we could build a dialogue in early, it becomes part of what they focus on over the long term.
Jerry, this is Larry. I'd like to just exercise my role as timekeeper. We have 10 minutes left.
Okay.
But I want to make sure we also deal with the concept of where does valuation fit in with innovation?
Ah, of course. Yeah. Some of you picked me up on that one. Thank you. This is not bait and switch. We will move to innovation. My whole life's been around innovation, both my company and what I teach, and in fact, my book is called Commercializing. I'm sorry, Larry, I'm gonna do it again.
Oh boy.
Commercializing innovation. And first of all, innovation is a very elusive target. And one of my favorite companies in the whole Fortune 500 regime is the 3M Corporation. For 40 years, they are at the top of the most innovative companies in this country. And their value continues to go up and stays up. It's not Microsoft, but it's doing it. 40 years. And there's that wonderful anecdotal story of Post-it where, depending on who you listen to, somebody had a batch of bad glue and went to church and made it a page holder. Another one was a secretary who used to mark her documents with it, whatever. That's a $4 billion industry for 3M today. And it came about because the culture in the company supported innovation. And then I started to wonder, well, how do you keep that in front of the companies I deal with, small, medium-sized companies? They're so intent on focus that they have to, they don't really have the luxury of creating that culture. And I think that's where it starts to unravel. In my company, we had an example. We had pioneered a way to regulate airflow. And people didn't buy our product based on that at first, and we had to do a lot of understanding of their needs. And then we created a school. We actually taught people how to use the innovative elements of our company and invited potential customers to it. So innovation is a very glamorous topic. We talk about it being built into product design, people's thinking, new market development, but it isn't necessarily connected back to the commercial value of innovation. And Larry, that's why it formed sort of a second topic as I was approaching this. I was more intent about finding a way to measure it than the actual innovation. So innovation is part of our culture. Innovative companies win, innovative companies do, but it's not enough in its own right. In my book, there's a chart in the middle of it that shows the importance of all of the stakeholders in the development of new commercial products. And I was astonished, the number of people who have an input. And they're the people who can take a product down, and there are people who can create an innovative value to it. So it's a huge topic. It's cultural in a company. If I had one takeaway from all of this, I would go back to the 3M's thing. How did that company, old line company in St. Paul, Minnesota, sustain an innovative edge over 40 years? Do not know the answer exactly, except I do know it's inbred in their culture. So now we come back to the central theme of tonight, which is it connected to valuation? Valuation is a measure of the key elements that affect the long-term outcome of a company. And somewhere in there are soft measurements. How innovative was the last product? How innovative was our approach to market? How innovative are the new employees that we're bringing in? How innovative was our acquisition of capital? And the litmus test of innovation pervades the company and it can't be lost. So I wasn't sure how to bring that to you as a topic in its own right, since Larry chastised me for missing the center of the topic. We could come back to that sometime and just look how the elements of innovation deal with the success of a company. And what role does the board have in assuring that it stays centered? So I think it's an extremely important topic, it's shadowed by the fact that we have to have measures for it. And in my mind, valuation is one of the primary measures of the long-term stability of a company. So I hope I've answered that, Larry. I'm feeling the time pressure.
Yep, you and we have 5 minutes left. Let's just throw the floor open for any questions, comments to Jerry.
I have a question.
Classroom, that's not a good sign when nobody answers.
How about Philippe? Philippe was in our group, and he probably has some observations about. He's with Vertex, and we all know that that's a very successful company now. But he has some observations about competitive position and product and all that kind of stuff. That might be an interesting story for you. I didn't put you on the spot, Philippe, but I think.
Fair enough, happy to do it. No, and I think Rudy did a nice job of sort of summarizing a lot of the aspects of you know, how competition affects valuation over time, and just our own position. I'm trying to figure back. In 2011, we put a product out that was the fastest drug ever to $1 billion. Within 18 months, that product was off the market because someone else came and ate our lunch. And so they out-innovated us. In fact, ironically enough, we had an opportunity to buy the asset that out-innovated us, and we left it on the table. So I think the competitive landscape is an incredibly important part of valuation and really effective.
I'm feeling the time pressure, but let me drag you back to the central theme. If it is important, why isn't it stage center?
I think it's because a lot of the times the people who do the inventing, the main core people who keep the lights on, are the drivers, and that noise, all that noise of how to do that overtakes the value, thinking about valuation, thinking about that long term. To me, what struck me was Karen's words and saying, you know, she's looking to have this happen in 7 years. If that's the case, innovation has to be paramount and pinnacle back to, tiles have moved. Somebody had said something like making sure that at that time you're getting the price you want to be paid. You have to make sure you're making great decisions all along the way, where your capital investments are, all your human capital, all these different aspects are key to ensuring you're getting your best price when you're set up for market. And to Philippe's point, you are also keeping in mind the competition could turn around and basically crank out a generic, and then whatever you've been doing, that innovation is gone. So, you know, unless you're someone like Mark, who's a serial inventor, an entrepreneur who's always having these different dimensions, most of the people who start these companies don't have the intellectual bandwidth or the capability. They're using friends, families, and all these influencers like you, Jerry, to help them. But most of the time, they're just trying to keep the lights on. But that can be to their peril if they're not careful, because the auspices of running a business still has to happen even if they're not ready for it.
Ingrid, there's a saying that we shouldn't confuse activity with progress. And that's what I see happen daily in early stage companies. I understand keeping the lights on and keeping the product out. But somewhere there has to be a value statement that says, hold it, that's not why we're here. Very hard to do under the pressure, especially in the early stage companies like the one I purported. But that balance is why we hire the CEO and the board, and we expect the board to keep the CEO focused on that over time. That's our job. So I think it's a very real topic. Thank you.
So Jerry, you just said the last thing, which is that it is the board's job. I think
absolutely
in the scenario where Ingrid was just describing, that you may have a CEO who might be the chief scientist or what have you, that is why you have a board. To make sure that those other elements, in fact, are being addressed and are front and center. For what that is worth, I think.
No, I agree entirely. In my company, I had 7 board members, and each of them actually had a job description of what I looked at. One was international, one was finance, one was operations. And we relied on their critical assessment of our day-to-day activity. I think the board has a huge voice in this. How well they manage that, we could have a lot of discussion. Yeah.
Well, Jerry, I think there's a balance too, right? I think there's also a balance of not getting in the way. You know, I think that's really the magic formula is what's the right balance to allow.
Well, I'll tell you, my favorite character on our board was a fellow, huge industrial background. And he quietly went through the whole meeting, and I said, oh shit, he's being too quiet. And at the end of the meeting, he sat down with a one-sheeter, handwritten, and he always was very polite. He said, here's some of my observations. So you're right, it has to be managed. And there's a place where the board become obtrusive to the day-to-day activity. Absolutely. Delicate management problems.
At this point, let me intervene and thank Jerry very much for writing the case and hosting the program. So thank you very much, Jerry.
Thank you, Larry.
It's going to appear, this podcast will appear on boardoptions.com by Monday next week. And you can listen to it and tell your friends to listen to it. Next month, we will have another case, and it'll be on family business kinds of issues. And I hope to see you then. meantime, thank you very much for attending. And again, thank you, Jerry, for running this.
And thanks for your help, Larry.
Right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody. Larry.
Bye-bye. Bye, everybody. Bye-bye.